Alert. Ryan's combat reflexes were taking over, going into an automatic response. Diving forward and rolling on his right shoulder, his mind rode over the savage pain in his lower back. In the second or so it took him to come up into a fighting crouch, Ryan had figured out that there were two attackers, one who'd hit him with what looked in the darkness like a baseball bat, the other holding a steel blade that glinted in the reflected splinters of moonlight. His assailants were good. They'd come up quietly enough to take Ryan completely by surprise. That spoke for itself. They were also fast enough to follow up on him, giving him no chance to draw the Sig Sauer from its holster. The bat hissed through the air, and Ryan managed to roll away, his feet slipping on a mixture of ice and broken bottles.
Bastard!
Ryan fumbled for the panga on his hip, but again he had to throw himself away from the pounding length of wood.
Let me blast him!
Citizen said no noise, you shithead stoop!
Ryan filed away the fact that one of the five had sent assassins after him, wondering if he'd live to make use of the information. To buy himself a moment, Ryan scooped up a handful of the frozen mud and glass and hurled it into the face of the nearer of the attackers. If Jennison, the pale, squinting leader of the gang of killers, had set him up, then the sound of a shot might attract him to the alley. Ryan went for the 18-inch steel blade of the machete instead. He gripped the hilt and powered himself up off the floor of the back alleyway, watching for the swing of the baseball bat again. But the man was off balance, not expecting to find his scrambling victim coming at him with an enormous knife gleaming in his fist. Ryan jabbed at the assassin's throat with the point, feeling it penetrate flesh. But it wasn't a fatal wound. It wasn't intended to be. Ryan knew that the man's instinctive reaction would be to snatch at the gash in his neck, feeling to see how badly he was hurt. There would be the warm wetness of blood on his fingers, a mixture of horror and shock clouding the man's mind. The panga swung across Ryan's body and he tensed himself, ready to put all of his strength into the backhanded blow, aimed at his attacker's lower stomach and groin. It worked perfectly. Blood flooded out from the gaping wound, hot across Ryan's hand, dappling the blade of the panga and pattering into the icy slush around their feet.
Oh, fuck. He's done me.
Ryan didn't hesitate. In front of him, he could see that the would-be murderer was on his knees, his arms wrapped around the leaking wound in his belly, clutching himself as though he could prevent his life from soaking away into the dirt.
To him.
Ryan heard the sound as the second of his attackers dropped his knife. But the one-eyed man was concerned only with finishing the man who knelt helpless in front of him. The panga swept up and back, shoulder high, coming around in a lethal arc of pure power, all of Ryan's strength going into it. On and out, clear through the other side of the man's muscular neck. Ryan stepped back, shielding himself from the fountain of arterial blood that jetted 8 or 10 feet high into the blackness. He heard the severed head roll against the back wall of the cinema.
What the fuck? Oh, blessed saints!
Despite his horror, the second attacker managed to keep his nerve. There was the distinctive sound of a blaster's hammer being thumped back. Ryan was aware that what little light illuminated the alley was behind him, turning him into a prime silhouetted target for the murderer. And he was a good 7 or 8 paces away from the barrel of the gun, too far to try anything, and too close for the man to miss him.
Jim Jennison didn't pay you to let everyone in Yuma know I'd been killed.
There was nothing. No bullet, no response, just nothing.
You walk away and it won't happen. Just do it.
Fuck you! You cut off my brother's fucking head and tell me to walk away? Nobody orders me to walk away. Nobody!
Tell me something.
What?
Why did Jennison pay you and your brother to have me put away?
Fuck you.
There's gotta be a reason. It cost your brother his life already.
Wasn't supposed to be you. Not so much Jack for you.
Ryan inched a half step forward. He thought he'd seen a hint of movement behind the dark shape of the man with the gun. His immediate guess was that it was Jennison, coming to check up on how his Jack had been spent.
What do you mean? Listen, this doesn't have to be this way.
Has to be now. If you hadn't done that...
Who did Jennison say he really wanted chilled by you?
Don't fucking matter now.
I'm still interested.
Jennison paid us to chill any of you, but most...
Knuckles?
He came after you. It was nearly too late. I'm sorry, Ryan. I got him with my tomahawk.
That's good. If you'd been with me, they might have taken us both at once. You did right. It's just a shame you didn't let him go on living a few seconds longer. He was about to tell me something important. Well, never mind.
I'm sorry about that, Ryan.
Well, we found the back door of Seidler's fortress, all right.
Could I have the blaster, Ryan?
Sure. But keep it out of sight, or we're in deep shit. Someone sees you with it and recognizes it, Knuckles.
I got it. Can we go back now?
To the warm splendor of the Snow Palace? Sure. Let's go.
We're just gonna leave the dead man here?
They won't mind, Knuckles. They're past minding anything.
Ryan wasn't at all surprised that the killing of the two men in the alley produced no sort of consequence. There was no visit from sentries. When Rosie came up in the morning with the maid carrying their loaded breakfast trays, she never even mentioned the deaths. It was as if they had never happened. The fourth day, out of their allotted 10, was also spent on intensive rehearsals. Ryan had finally decided to mention to JP that one of the assassins had said that Jim Jennison paid them to take out the Outlanders, but that their prime target hadn't actually been Ryan.
They say who he wanted to hit?
No.
Me?
Ryan was sitting by the window, speaking quietly, while behind them, Ellie was enthusiastically readying herself for the climactic scene in which she enjoyed sexual relations with both Doc and Michael. The teenager was proving shy and stubborn, but Doc was flinging himself into the part with great abandon.
Didn't say, but from the way you've been acting, JB, I'd have thought it was likely.
The armorer tugged back the corner of the faded plastic lace curtains, glancing out into the morning still light. The wind had risen to near gale force, carrying hail and sleet with it, the pellets of ice pattering against the glass.
Could be.
You know this Jennison? Or someone else in the gang?
Seems more than likely. Trouble is, there's only one way I can be certain. That's by going out there. And if I'm right, then it could be time for us to hit the graveyard shift.
And that was all he'd say. After the noon meal of bread and cheese, with slightly rancid butter, Monsignor Capistrano was readying his augmented company for their first performance of The Revenge.
Perhaps you and J.B. could be our audience.
I've got to go see the Baron again, fix up the stage, and make sure that rear door is cleared for use.
Then you won't see me in all my pomp, Ryan.
Oh.
What's wrong?
Nothing, dear heart. Just a spasm of pain behind the eyes. I get it sometimes. First night nerves, they used to call it in the olden days. The greatest stars in the Hollywood and Broadway firmaments used to suffer from it. So they say. It'll go. Always goes.
But Ryan had seen more than that, and he wondered again about Knuckles' scar. Deathlands was still a patchwork of dangers. Hotspots scattered around from the long-life nukes still had the ability to deal out radiated cancers. As Ryan left, they were still playing the opening scene, where Ellie, newly an orphan, was leaning her head on a table, bemoaning her poverty and explaining to the audience the plot of being left the matchless mine. Diego was waiting to enter and offer her salvation from her mortgage and her worries, but only at a dual price, her honor and her silver mine. As he clattered down the main staircase of the Snow Palace, Ryan wondered again about Jim Jennison and the link with J.B. Dix. He made his way outside to check the livery stables, filling his lungs with the sweet scent of summer hay bursting from the loft. Capistrano's wag was safe, with their horse comfortably quartered in one of the row of 20 or so stalls. Ryan wanted to make certain that the rebuilt Conestoga rig could, if necessary, be pulled by a pair of horses, and that there were other draft animals there. Their own mounts were also in the stable, the burro baring its tombstone teeth at him as he leaned over the partition.
Baron's ill.
What's that?
Ill! You fucking deaf, are you, Outlander? He's ill.
What with?
Go ask him yourself. How should I know? Ill! What's that mean, anyway?
Bad?
Wizard Sidler doesn't come around and whisper in my fucking ear when he gets a dose or a cough or a boil on his ass.
I just want to know when he'll be okay enough for me to see him. We need a say-so on the play tonight inside there.
Ha!
Ryan hung on to his self-control and resisted the temptation to ram the Sig Sauer into the man's mouth and break off a few teeth.
Won't be no fucking play tonight. Tell you that right now, so you can fuck off and not keep us all here in the cold.
Baron said it was his decision. Said to make sure I spoke to the hunter and not one of his bastard snapping mongrels.
The man looked at him. There were a half a dozen of the guards standing around the entrance to the lobby of the multiplex. Ryan noticed at that moment that the tall Aussie Grant was at the rear of the group, making himself inconspicuous. The narrowed eyes, one blue and one green, were fixed on Ryan's face. In the shadows, Ryan spotted the man's right hand was resting casually near the butt of his Smith & Wesson revolver.
Outlander, you just finally...
No, that's not a good idea.
You hear what he called me?
Get on with it.
Seems there's an awful lot of pigs dipping their...